excited that I got to pick chapter 12. Actually, I don't think I picked chapter 12. I think it was one of the leftovers, and I couldn't believe nobody else picked it, so I was pretty excited about that. All right. We will get to the text here in just a second, so if you are not there yet, go ahead and be turning there while we talk about these things. You know, the speakers who have been here so far have done an incredible job at laying some wonderful foundations for each chapter. You know, we've got different styles of teaching. We've had different kind of thoughts when it came to the way they wanted to present, you know, some of the things here. And so it's been valuable to me personally. I'm kind of a person that loves to, I love to enjoy what's being said, but I also love to break down styles and how people teach and learn from that and glean and gather and grab when I get an opportunity to. And I really appreciate all of those things. You've heard this probably, I know I have, at least seven times from seven of the speakers, and they have repeated part of the thematic element of Hebrews, which is better, right? The word better, the word supreme, the word, what's the other word that somebody else said? I'm going to forget it now.
Superior.
Thank you. That was the word. All right. That Jesus is superior, that he's better, right, than these other things. He's better than the angels. He's better than the old law. He's better than Moses. He's better than Abraham. He's a better high priest, and he has better promises, all right? So he's better. Supremacy. I love the word. I love how different folks have brought it out, but I just want us to understand that. The context of chapter 11 is really, really important, okay? Because we look at it and we say, okay, by faith, by faith, by faith. In fact, I didn't know it was still on here until I pulled this thing out. But this was, you know, last week with Bill, you know, he broke down every single one of those and said, by faith, you know, it's about sacrifice and pleasing God and building an ark. And these are the things that they chose, these men, these women, not to be afraid and rely on God's provision. All of those things were ways in which they proved their faith, right? But my favorite part of what Bill did last week was putting that by faith blank and letting us fill our own names in. How am I going to be faithful? How am I building a legacy of faith? What am I doing in the lives of those who are around me who are going to see my faith in action, right? I mean, what am I doing? That's essentially what Bill asked. Now, I love what I love about chapter 12 is the therefore, because I'm all into therefores, right? Therefores are there. You know, I think I've mentioned that many times. What's the therefore, therefore? That's what I was always taught growing up since I was a little kid. When I saw therefore, it meant look back, because there's a therefore for a reason. Right? Because it's essentially saying, because of everything that I've just said, let me tell you some more. Right? And so I have to look back a little bit. Chapter 11, they know every single one. Who's they? The listeners. The author's writing to folks that he knows. It'd be like me writing you guys a letter and me talking about people that we all have in common. Right? I mean, I could say, oh, you know, when Austin leads that Caterpillar song, and you'd be like, oh, she's so cute, you know. When Kelly gripes because we're all eating and we should be in having Bible class, right? We know that's part of the deal, right? We want to be on time. And Mike has these corny jokes, and everybody would be like, yeah, well, yeah, we know those things, all right. So those are things that we know, but that's just from a group of people that are meeting right here. This story, the by faith chapter 11, is generations and generations of faithfulness. I mean, you not only have Abraham, but you have his son Isaac, and then you have his son Jacob. You know, I mean, it goes down the line. And you have all of this history of faithfulness. All the folks that are on the backside of this represent hundreds, a thousand years. And so they've shared their faith. They've talked about these guys before. They've sat around the campfires and shared the stories. I don't think they had marshmallows back then. So I'm not sure they roasted marshmallows when they told the stories. But one of the favorite things for Karen and I when we were, you know, full-time going 1,000 miles an hour in youth ministry was those campfires. You know, having those camping trips and sitting around with the kids and not allowing any electronics and telling stories. You know, and they weren't always biblical stories, but they always found a way into the conversation. We would find ways to pretend like we were sitting around a fire and or talking about being in the wilderness and how that would have been, you know, to sit around a fire every single night and maybe tell a story about, man, do you remember the plagues? Do you remember those gnats? Oh, they were everywhere. Do you remember the boils? Oh, yeah, man. Riggs had the biggest boil ever on the back of his neck. Yeah, it was gross. Remember that, Scotty, that big boil? Yeah. And so, you know, it would be just interesting to be have been in that culture to talk about those things. And so these folks know the author is not writing about things that they don't know about. They know them well. They claim them as their forefathers, as their ancestors, as great men and women of faith. And so he says, I don't want you to forget. I don't want you to forget all these men and women. But I do want you to realize there's somebody better. If you want to follow somebody's faith, if you want to see faith, and you want to get through what you're going through, then I have another man that has faith. And this is where we kind of pick this up. So he's talked about, right? You go, in fact, I'm going to get somebody to read Hebrews 11, 39 and 40. You know, the author didn't write, okay, Hebrews 11, I'm done with that chapter, so let me write Hebrews 12. He just wrote a letter, right? And it wasn't until thousands of years later, well, about 1,600 years later, that they broke them into chapters. So when we look at a chapter, it wasn't written that way, but the experts are the ones breaking them up. And so I always like to look back a little bit, which is why the therefore is therefore, right? But look at verse 39 and 40. Somebody read that.
These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what they had been promised.
Stop. Okay, right there. Hang on. Right? All of these that I've just been telling, all these of faith, they didn't get what they were promised. Right? They never received it. It was never theirs because they're all dead. Right? They're not there any longer. You can talk about them, but it's always in the past. Isn't it funny that Jesus is the only one of the heroes of faith that we talk about in the present? We talk about him in the past, we talk about him in the present, and we're going to talk about him in the future because he already is in the future. I mean, he's beyond time. He's God, right? Okay, so start over, if you don't mind. Sorry. 39. Yeah, just start right from the beginning.
These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what they had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect.
Wow, teleos, be made perfect. So he says, God has something planned that was better. So God had something better planned. Therefore, he writes, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles us. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him, verse 3 says, who endured such opposition from sinners so that you won't grow weary and you won't lose heart. Fix your eyes on him. You got all these other guys that you've read about, all these other men and women, but they didn't receive what was promised because God had something better. And guess what better is, or who is? It's Jesus. The whole book is filled with this better than and superior and the supremacy. And so Jesus shows up. Why is he better? Well, there's lots of ways to answer that question. But before we get there, I want to fix our eyes on Jesus. And I use something that I think is really amazing to me. All right, behavioral scientists use this term and help us to understand it. It's this idea of reticular activation system. Now, I know I've probably talked about it at least once before. from the pulpit like really fast, and they didn't probably talk about it as much. But reticular activation system. Let me tell you how reticular activation system works. Okay, it's based on a network of nerve cells. We all have it. Every one of us have it. All right? And it works like this. Once something's been brought to our attention, we've been prepared to see it. So once it's been brought to our attention, we're prepared to see it, and then we'll see it all the time. I'll give you, for example, when Hunter was looking for a job, and Kelly said, well, what about Spectrum Paint? And I was like, Spectrum Paint, where's that? And he's like, man, they're all over the place. There's a bunch of them around the city. I went, really? I've never ever heard of Spectrum Paint. And so Hunter's interviewing and eventually gets the job, and the next day I see a Spectrum Paint truck drive by, and I was like, there's a Spectrum Paint truck. Wow, I've never seen a Spectrum Paint truck. Then we pass by Reezer's, and there's a Spectrum Paint, and then we go somewhere else, there's another Spectrum Paint. I was like, there's Spectrum Paints everywhere, and I've never seen one before. Another example. Maybe you learn a new word, or a new word kind of comes, you know, the first time you've heard that word, and you're like, well, that's kind of an interesting word, and then you start hearing it all the time. You're like, everybody says that word. How am I the only person that did not word? But the biggest one is this. Have you ever noticed when you're looking at a car and you go, you know, I'm kind of liking this Honda Accord. You know, I haven't seen any Honda Accord Sports. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a Honda Accord Sport. I've seen like 9,000 of them since I bought mine. Okay. And I've seen five. In fact, one was sitting next to me yesterday. I mean, the exact car. And the little kid goes and rolls the window down. And they said, your car's like ours. And I was like, no, your car's like mine. And she just looked at me. It's like, it's supposed to be funny, but he didn't get it. He's a little girl. Well, whatever. So, but it was like when I bought my Nissan Altima, you know, I was like, I'm looking at Nissan Altimas. And all of a sudden, everywhere I look, there's a Nissan Altima. And now I see them without even thinking about it. There's Honda Accords everywhere. If you pick a color and you say, well, you know, I wonder if that blue color of that car is very popular or not. Well, you're going to see every blue car that color from now on, because it's a reticular activation system. It's where your mind has been primed. Other words, I just used the word prime, frequency illusion, selective attention, or priming. We've been primed to see a certain way. You can actually get your brain trained to see certain ways. It's kind of like when you either see the glass half empty or half full. You can either train yourself to be negative, or you can train yourself to be positive. You can see things through a light, or you can see things through a tunnel. You can choose to see the positives, or you can choose to see the negatives. It's just part of your reticular activation system. Maybe you don't realize it, but you might have been grown up in a situation where you were force-fed a certain way of thinking. And that's how you think. And so you can retrain your brain. You can retrain all of that to start seeing differently. Okay? And I think that's what Jesus is saying, and what Paul is saying, and what all the apostles are saying when they talk about this idea of having this new mind in Christ. It's having a new vision. It's having a new thought pattern. It's everything like that. So here the writer of Hebrews is saying, hey, I want you to fix your eyes on Jesus. I want you to see Jesus everywhere you go. I want you to see the ramifications of Jesus' love. I want you to see his compassion. I want you to see his understanding. I want you to see Jesus. And when you start looking for Jesus, you'll see Jesus more and more and more. In fact, if you start looking at how God is working in your life and you're really paying attention to it and you're looking for those signs, you'll see it all the time. It's almost scary. It's like seeing Altimas and seeing Accords, or seeing, you know, the first time you get a certain type of a colored shirt, and you go, man, nobody wears this. Joy's got that color. You know, or so-and-so's got that. Like, wow, everybody's got that. I love to do that on Sunday mornings. I like to wear a certain color and then go, all right, Brad, yeah, you got the memo. It's maroon day. See, Kelly got the memo. You know, and so, but then you start looking around and you're like, Ben's got maroon. And you start looking for certain things. I don't know how your brain works, but everyone has a reticular activation system, okay? We tend to miss things when we're focused on other things. We have a tendency to miss things when we're focused on other things. Shane, have you got that first video for me? I want to show you a video illustration, okay? And so can everybody see? Okay, it's going to give you the information you need to follow the instructions. Okay, so go ahead. Yeah. How many did you get?
Eight.
Did you see the suicidal guy?
Yeah.
That guy? It happened. Did anybody miss that? Yeah, focusing on the other thing. There's lots of these kinds of videos where you're so focused on what they ask you to do that you can miss a bigger picture. All right, here's another. Nobody go to sleep. So have another anything with an apple in the back row? Thank you on that one. All right, so now this is not necessarily the reticular activation system, but how many of you guys were looking all over the place trying to see if there's something else going to happen, right? Looking for like, okay, there's going to be a dog, a cat, something going to happen, right? You get ready because I'm priming your brain to say, hey, there's something different, okay? So let's see if you can figure this one out real quick, all right? One more. He said that. I knew it. All right, thank you. Okay, I just threw that in there because I thought you'd be really concentrating. Like, what am I going to see? What am I going to see? All right. It was Shane's idea. It was Shane's idea. No. All right, so our focus, yeah, our focus and our vision, we can help one another out. If I said, hey, this is a video where you've got to see something that you may not be able to see, all right? You've got to really pay attention because you're going to be focused on one thing or another. See, I think that that's what we do in the world, right? We live here, and God says, hey, I want to show you some incredible things, but we're so busy and we're so fulfilled in our lives that we already have that sometimes we just miss what God's showing us. I mean, God is doing some incredible things, and we just never even see it. And we could be like, hey, did you know that, you know, my kids did this? Or, hey, did you know my husband or my wife? Or, hey, did you know? And somewhere in there would be like, did you not see the guy hanging himself? You know, and they're like, what? What are you talking about? Did you miss the person that was asking for help? Did you miss that opportunity to serve? Did you not realize that you had an opportunity to do something great for God there? How did you miss that? I mean, I wonder if God is asking us those questions sometimes because we're looking for other things. And the scary thing at the end was literally just to be funny. But we oftentimes we're more ready. You know? And usually there's a lot of those that are like, look at the little puppy, or look at the little kitten, or look at something really beautiful, and you're like, oh man, that is just, oh, that, you know, and you're like, oh, I hate that kind of stuff, right? Because it's like, I didn't want to see that. Well, our focus, our vision, our perspective, our priorities are really important, and I think that I'm so excited the way this lesson fit into what I'm going to be doing on the next two Sundays, which is talking about heaven and our excitement about heaven, hopefully, and what heaven's going to be like. It's going to be a kind of a little two-part series. So here's the deal, all right? Why is our focus important? Why is our vision important? Why are our priorities important in the context of Christianity? Why? And I do want an answer. So you don't lose focus, right? You're looking at the right thing, right? What else? What are you thinking? Why? Why are our priorities important? Why is our focus important?
We've been in line with society.
Okay, yeah, because it's not even close, is it? What the world sees and what we see is supposedly supposed to be different. Our priorities should be on a totally different level. Totally different level. Okay, and so that's really important. Somebody else? And there are a lot of distractions, right? While everybody's tossing balls, we're trying to figure out other things that are going on. Sometimes we're the ones tossing the ball. Anybody know how to juggle? I used to know how to juggle. I mean, I love it. You really have to kind of concentrate. I've seen guys that can juggle 11 and 12 and 13 balls, you know, and they're just going 1,000 miles an hour. And I'm thinking, wow, that's so talented. But it takes a lot of focus. And I think that some of us try and juggle so much in our lives that we lose focus on Jesus and we lose focus on the things that are important. Look at Hebrews chapter 10, verse 36. Okay, why go there? Well, because there's a sandwich. Hebrews 11 is the sandwich, right? In between Hebrews 10 and Hebrews 12 in these passages. And I want us to kind of understand what the writer is really trying to help the listeners to pay attention to. Because let me remind you of this, that he's talking to Jews who are considering going back to Judaism. He's talking to new converts who are thinking Judaism was probably an easier way of doing things. He's talking to Christians who may think, okay, well, I'm getting tired of being synagogued and I'm getting tired of fighting these Jews and going against these religious people, and maybe I'll just, you know, do my own thing. I'm kind of getting tired of that. And he says to them, you need to persevere. You need to hang on. The word persevere, as it was taught to me as a little kid, was you need to keep on keeping on. Right? You got to hang in there. You got to persevere. It's kind of like football coaches, and it's kind of like coaches that we have, right? We go, you stick with this. You work harder. You keep going. You're going to get this. You're going to figure it out. He's saying to them, hey, I want you to persevere. How do I know? Because look at Hebrews 10:36. He says, you need to persevere. Other translations may say you need endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he's promised. So that when you've done what you're supposed to do, you'll receive what you were promised. It's this word right here, right? And I always look at how you say it, hupomene, right? Hupomene. That's this word, the Greek word for endurance. It's in chapter 10, verse 36. And then in chapter 10, verse 39, he says, we don't belong, he's going to compare, we don't belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed, but to those who have faith and are saved. Why bring up 10:36 and 10:39? Because right before he says, by faith, and here's what faith is, and let me explain faith to you. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. That's how I memorize it. I was really mad at Bill last week for not saying RSV, right? He did the Message and the King James Version. I memorized everything in the Revised Standard Version, which is like an archaic, it's almost like, you know, Latin. It's just not there. And so nobody knows RSV, but I memorized it. You know, faith is the conviction of things not seen, all right, or the things not hoped for. I'm sorry, faith is the, I just forgot it myself. Wow. I just quoted it, and now I messed my own self up. Faith is the conviction of things not seen and the hope of... That's why I can't remember it anymore. Nobody uses the RSV, right? 10:36, you need to persevere. You don't belong to the, we don't belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed, but to those who have faith and are saved. So let me tell you about faith. I can tell you what Hebrews 11:6 says. And without faith, it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must first believe that he exists. Okay? You've got to believe he exists, and he rewards those who seek him. Okay?
Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for.
Conviction of things not seen. Thank you. Okay? Faith is the assurance. I got the conviction. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, and the assurance of things hoped for, and the conviction of things not seen. All right? Hebrews 11:6. By faith, right? By faith, all that by faith. It's impossible to please him without faith. Impossible. Because God needs to see your faith. I mean, you need to know there's a God. You must believe that he exists. That's part of Hebrews chapter 11. But the endurance is, how do you endure, right? We got to run the race with perseverance. This word race is the word agon. Now, I've got where I love to look at the Greek because it really helps us. Agon, right? It's the actual word that means where the athletic contest took place. It was a place of intense struggle. It was a place of agony. That's where the word comes from. It's agon. It's agony to go through this race. The Grecian Games, the foot race was first in the order of the events. Always. It was first in the importance, too. It was the most important event. It was the first event and the most important event. Why? Because it was an endurance contest. You oftentimes hear the Christian race is not a sprint, it's a marathon. Okay. Now, Hunter answered that. Maybe you don't hear it as much, but I know he's heard it because I've said it 1,000 times. We're not in a race. We're in a marathon. Okay. Endurance. The whole book of Hebrews is about endurance. When you go to the Old Testament and you start seeing them running around in the wilderness, you know, all the experts will tell you, well, from point A to point B, it shouldn't have taken them about like 13 days, but it took them 40 years, you know. Well, it was because there was endurance that was taking place. And God was training his people to be obedient. He was trying to help them through his disciplines. The latter part of Hebrews chapter 12 talks about that discipline and how important that discipline is. But the thing that we need to understand is that we're in this race. And he says, let us throw off everything that hinders. Now, how many of you guys do the 4Ks, 5Ks, 10Ks and all that stuff, right? Do you bring a backpack? You know, do you bring your purse? Do you take all this stuff and carry it with you? You know, you come in and you're like, well, I stopped at McDonald's and I got dinner for the family, but I thought I'd just go ahead and take it with me. You know, I'm going to run the race. We buy the light shoes. We buy the skimpier little shorts and tighter fitting clothing so we can be unhindered when we run. I used to have this red, it's almost scary to think about. It was a netting type shirt. I mean, like, seriously nasty 1980s stuff, but that was what I ran in because it was really, it was like a, I'm thinking Queen, what's his name? Freddie Mercury wore it in one of the videos where it's a netting. I had that shirt, it was red, and that's what I ran in. And I had red shorts, and they were pretty skimpy little 1980s red shorts, and I ran barefoot, so I didn't have shoes. And so I'd run my 8 miles a day, except on Sundays, every day. And I'd wear the same thing every day. And my parents would be like, you stink. And I go, yep. And no skunk smells worse than me. So it didn't matter if I passed by a skunk when I ran on the highway. So I stunk pretty bad too. But he says, let us throw off everything that hinders and sin that so easily entangles us because we're in this race. Why are we gathering all this stuff to run this race? and all the stuff that comes with this life. We're not talking about husbands and wives and children and grandchildren, things like that. We're talking about those things that we can't keep. Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount says, you know, don't store up for yourselves things that moth can destroy and rust can consume, right? Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust can consume and where thieves can't break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So all of the messages all the way through, and especially here in Hebrews chapter 12, is about running this race. And the writer of Hebrews from chapter 10, verse 36 and 37 and 38 and 39 leads up to and says, hey, this is an endurance race. It's important that you endure. You have got to get through this because it's important, because God has laid up a prize for you. It's called heaven. It's going to be the greatest thing that you'll ever want, and you want the prize. But it's not a foot race. It is a marathon. All right? And let me show you some folks who ran some marathons. Look at Abraham and look at Isaac and look at Jacob and look what they did. Their whole life was a reflection of their love for God. Oh, there's times when they tripped and fell. There's times when they have big old huge scars on their elbows and knees and stuff, and they made their mistakes. But you know what? They endured because they were faithful. They just kept keeping on, and that's why they're in the Hall of Fame of Hebrews chapter 11. And so then he comes at the end of that chapter, and he says, therefore, because of all those guys and what they did, I want to lay down a better way for you to endure, because can't talk about it without losing it. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, right? The pioneer and perfecter of faith, for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. All the way from 10:36 all the way through, he talks about endurance and this word agony. When you think of agony, do you not think of the cross and what Jesus did on the cross? The writer of Hebrews says, let me tell you something, you can look at Abraham, and you can look at Moses, and you can look at Isaac and Jacob and everyone else, but if you want an example of faith and you want an example of endurance, look at Jesus, because he did better. He endured to the end. He experienced the cross, and that cross was agony. The greatest endurance feat of all time. And not only that, he went from the beginning of his life to the end of his life, sinless. That's endurance. That is the person that you need to pay attention to. So you need to keep your eyes on him. If you do that, you're in great shape. So we run the race, right? We don't look to the left. We don't look to the right. And we don't look back. You say, well, wait a minute. He's pointing back. Yeah, he's pointing back as an example. But he's talking about your race. We don't look back. I think it's in, I think I wrote it down. Luke 9:62, right? Where Jesus says, if you want to be my apostle, you want to be my disciple, don't look back. A person who's put his hand on the plow and looks back is not fit for the kingdom. Don't look backwards. Doesn't matter what you've done. Doesn't matter where you've been. Doesn't matter how bad your life might have been. This is a marathon. And so start putting one foot in front of the other and run the race. Okay? And when you run this race, look to Jesus, the pioneer, the author of your faith. He's the one who's blazed the trail. He's the one who knows how to get there. Okay? I am the way, the truth, and the life. All right? I know the way. And I know when I preached that sermon about the I am statements, that's the statement I made. If I'm going to try and figure out a way to get somewhere, the easiest way for me to figure out is to ask somebody who's been there. I mean, I can Google it and GPS it and all the rest of it, but if somebody lives at that house, and they go, oh, Brad goes, just jump in the car. I'll take you. How about that? That's an easy way to get to Brad's house. He doesn't have to explain it. I'll just get in with him, and he'll drive me there. Well, that's essentially what Jesus does. He shows us the way. And he says, in fact, if you want to join me or be part of me, all right, then I'll help you get there. So Jesus is the perfecter of our faith. It's from the Greek word teleos, my favorite word. Only time used in the Bible is here. It's the only time used in the entire Bible. It means one who has set the highest example of faith. He perfectly modeled faith. Christ epitomized endurance. right? And since this is a book about getting from point A to point B and not looking back and not going back and not going to return to what you've already done, endurance is a great theme in the book of Hebrews because he wants you to keep looking forward and looking forward to a reward. How was he able to finish his course? Look at verse 2. For the joy that was set before him. I love the way the author writes this. It's for the joy that was set before him that he endured the cross, scorning its shame, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you'll not grow weary and you won't lose heart. Have you ever been in a race? Well, this is kind of a tricky thing. The fastest mile that I ever ran, I think I've told people this before, we were supposed to be running outside at ACU on the track. You know, four times around the track is a mile. Well, Moody Coliseum is a smaller area, and they have tracks, lanes at Moody Coliseum, but you have to run around it 15 times. And when you're running, you're leaning, you know, and after about four or five laps, you're like, whoa, you know, you kind of almost get a little dizzy, so you kind of have to kind of keep yourself focused as to where you're running. And they said, don't look ahead when you're running, you know, or I'm sorry, don't look down when you're running, because if you look down when you're running, you'll get dizzy. If you look ahead and find something that changes, you won't get as dizzy as easy. So keep running. Well, I was flying, and we're doing this marathon type deal. And so I'm buzzing around the track, and they go, basket, last lap, go, 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 go. Man, I was raw, and I went as fast. I mean, I'm just sprinting as hard as I can. I get to the end, they go, oh, sorry, one more, we lied. You know, I was like, what? And so I just kept going, right? And there was a guy in front of me that I didn't realize, because I thought he was ahead of me, but he was actually that far behind me. But he was, and so, man, I was looking at him. And I mean, I'm going, and he's trying to finish, and I passed him right at the end. I was like, yeah, and then he just kept going. I was like, hey, whoa, what? And they're like, no, you're done, yeah. And I was like, wow, that felt really good. But I would have never ran that fast if they hadn't faked me out, right? I knew there was a little bit more. And so what's interesting to me is, consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you'll not grow weary and lose heart. We don't lose weary, or we don't lose heart and grow weary when we see somebody else running. I think that's why we're here as a church. You know, it's where we do life together. When I see somebody else and they're getting through things, you know, when I see Dawn, you know, feeling horrible and awful, you know, when Joe was still here and he just didn't feel all that great, but he's here on Sunday mornings, how inspirational. I mean, was he? Not wasn't just me. Because everybody else talked about it. Man, Joe just, you know, he looked like he's really hurting, but he's here. You know, that is running the race with endurance. That's what that's all about. And he won, didn't he? And we want to win too, because we want to see Joe again. I do. There's a lot of people I want to see when I get to heaven. But when I get weary, I've got to keep my eyes on somebody. And the writer of Hebrews says, you know what? You need to keep your eyes on Jesus, because he never will let you down. He never messed up. He never made a mistake. He ran the race as good as anyone can run it. I mean, we talk about the greats in the world, the ones that do incredible things. Michael Phelps, one of the racers, said, you know, how can you beat Michael Phelps? And he says, swim faster. And he goes, well, how do you do that? He goes, I watch him and I stay right with him. And I was thinking to myself when the guy was saying that, well, I just watch him and I'm going to stay right with him. I'm like, wouldn't you want to be in the lead? Because then you won't see him. you can't win. And it's like the Eskimo dog sled, right? The view never changes unless you're the lead dog. So that's kind of how that works, right? We want to pick the right person to follow. So how is he able? The joy that was set before him. Verse 22 through 24, I jumped ahead on this because after I practiced this and went through this a few times, I was like, you know what? There's no way I'm going to get all these verses in the middle. I even have them down at the bottom in case I do have time. But see, I knew I wasn't going to have time. So we're jumping to verse 22 through 24. Look what he says. He tells the author is saying, look to Jesus. He's the pioneer, the perfecter of our faith. He's the one that you need to keep your eyes on. Why? He says, because you've come to Mount Zion. Okay? To the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. You've come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You've come to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous who are made teleos, perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. And so it's all about better. You've come to a better place, and you've come to a place in your life where you can look back and see all of the things that those other guys did and all the ones that ran the race with faith. But guess what? They didn't receive what they were promised. They've got it now, but they never received it one time while they lived on this earth. But Jesus got everything. Everything while he was on it. He did everything he wanted to do, and then he received what was promised after he was dead and enjoys it to this day. Verse 28 and verse 29, therefore, there's another therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let's be thankful. And so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. All right, now I love that he grabs this allusion, or not the allusion, this analogy from Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 24, our God is a consuming fire. Because in Deuteronomy chapter 4, the Israelites are about to receive the promised land. I mean, it is right there, right? Moses is not allowed to go in. Joshua's leading him into the promised land. And God is speaking to Joshua and the people. And he's like, it's right here. Do you want it? Do you want it? It's right here. And he says to them in Deuteronomy chapter 4, persevere, endure, obey God, and he will give you what you're looking for. We're right on the cusp of receiving this heavenly gift from God, right? Heaven is just a little ways away. On Sunday morning, we're going to watch a Francis Chan video that has a beautiful, beautiful analogy in it with this little red piece of tape. Right, and he talks about this little piece of red tape and this long white rope. And I know many of you have seen it, but there's no way I can do a better job than what Francis Chan does with that. And this is what he's saying here. He's saying, hey, do you want the heavenly gift? I mean, why would you go back to Judaism? Why would you go back to a bunch of dead laws and a bunch of dead folks who can't give you what Jesus gives you? Jesus gives you everything you need. It's an incredible experience to be in the care of Jesus Christ and to know that he has opened this way for you to not be like their ancestors, right? Don't be like them who were disobedient. I want you to be obedient and faithful and endure. And when you get into the promised land, fight hard and live hard and love God and do the things that are right, because you're going to get this incredible inheritance. And then the writer of Hebrews says, I don't have any land for you, but I have something eternal, because God said it's ours. When we're faithful, and when we endure, and when we obey, and when we do what's right, and God says, you know what? No one can take that away from you, ever. No one can take it away from you. It's yours. It's your inheritance. You will sit at my Father's table. You will be adopted as children of God. You will live in his house, in my Father's house. There's many rooms. If it wasn't so, I wouldn't have told you, for I go to prepare a place for you. I mean, those are promises throughout Scripture, and the writer of Hebrews does this incredible job and tells us we've got to focus on the right things. Don't let everything else going on in life obscure what's important with what you see. This reticular activation system needs to work with Christianity too. I just believe it with all my heart that we need to pay attention to the spiritual things, pay attention to what God's doing, pay attention to the people he drops in your life, because I know he does it. And the more you pay attention to it, the more you're going to see it, and the more you're going to go, wow, that is amazing. I'm going to train my brain to see what God has in store for me, because our focus is important and it will help us endure. Look at that, 2 minutes. I'm done.